Welcome to the 24th episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in not yet cold enough, even though it's December, Helsinki, Finland.
It is December,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
It is very much so.
Yes.
I'm looking at the calendar and it is December.
It is December and it's not cold enough. It should be colder.
Yes.
Okay. I am one of your hosts, Luis, and with me is your other host, Jonas.
Moi moi.
In this episode, we are revisiting the Board Game OK Fantasy Collection. The last time we visited the Fantasy Collection was in episode 6 of the Board Game OK podcast, and last time we inducted 3 games into the Fantasy Collection: Strike, El Grande, and Ra. And Jonas, our
great
resident.
Great suggestions. Those were great additions.
Yes. And Jonas, our resident naysayer, vetoed all of the games that I proposed for our Fantasy Collection. Last time, we only decided to introduce games that we had already talked about in the podcast in previous episodes. In this episode, we have a bit of a freer format, and therefore we can introduce games that we haven't talked about in the podcast before, because maybe we have a bit longer to talk about them. Jonas, if you start vetoing all of my games, I'm going to start putting rules anti-vetoing, because it cannot be A, that you veto all of my games, even though I want to add them to a fantasy collection, and B, that you don't trust me enough to add games that I want to add, even though you haven't played them. So I re-listened to the episode and I was so disappointed about you not wanting to put some of those games. So let's see how this goes. And if does not go according to plan, or even if it goes according to plan, I might still implement anti-veto rules.
Mm-hmm. Should we do anti-veto games even for the games that Jonas has not actually played and has no way of recommending for anyone?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that you have to trust me.
Yeah.
You have to trust me that they're good games.
Luis said Final Girl is a good game.
Yeah.
It goes in the fantasy collection.
Yeah, you want to play a game for
one. Doesn't matter if Jonas has played it or not.
No, if it's a solo game, there you go. You grab Fantasy Girl. Final Girl, and you give it to them and say, play this. This is an amazing game.
Talking about fantasy, should we recap the basic idea of the fantasy collection? What does the fantasy collection represent?
The fantasy collection represents a collection that if we move together to live somewhere, because we were like, there's two versions of this.
Yes.
Which
and I like
together.
Your version more. I think mine makes more sense. Yours is a funnier version.
Okay. We have a company where we are doing events for different people that hire us to host their board game events. And we have a collection that we take with us to those events that people hired us to host.
Yes, and some of these games include solo games.
Of course.
So we go host those things.
When somebody doesn't want to play with the boss and the boss is like, hey, I still want to play. Yeah. And like, okay, yeah, we also have the option for you to play solo. We have to have variety.
Go read rules for 1 hour in that corner.
Yes.
And then play something.
No, I will explain the rules because that's what they're paying us for, to host so that we explain the rules for them. I would explain the rules of Final Girl to the boss and then he would play. And he would be like giving me a tip because like, hey, great game. I loved it. And I would not have found this game and I would have to play with my incompetent colleagues if I didn't have, not that the boss is competent or not, or that the colleagues are incompetent. Just like he felt bad because nobody wanted to play. So he was sour and then he said incompetent colleagues when he doesn't really think they're incompetent.
Okay, here's the big question.
Yes.
How big is this fantasy tip that you get?
I think just 10 euros or something.
10 euros.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a big thing. It's just like, hey, I really have fun. Thank you for this. Anyhow.
And my version of the fantasy collection is me and Luis moved to a new country. We know no one in that country. And we have to start a collection from scratch. So what do we add into our collection? I guess in this scenario, we are roommates.
Yes.
So we have a shared shelf and we need to start adding games to that shelf.
Yes. And there's no limit right now because our shelf is empty. So all of the games that we mentioned today can be added. There's absolutely no limit. When we start reaching a certain amount of games, at some point, we will need to add limits because either our shelf is full or our ban to transport games is full.
Yes, but the shelf space, even though it's not a limitation now, there should be some kind of limitation here because the idea here is that we're not just adding any game to the shelf. We need thumbs up for both of us to get the game to the shelf.
For now, yes, we need thumbs up.
Yeah, because otherwise, what value is in this fantasy collection if it's just, well, this is the games Jonas likes, these are the games that Luis likes?
So far, but
here are the games we find common ground. with
yeah,
this
but
case.
If Jonas keeps hating all of my games, even though I tell him they are great and I would like to play them with him, then we need to start just caring about wontons.
I don't think we're going to get that 10 euro tip with Final Girl.
Well, we don't know.
That's all I need to say.
But we could have maybe gotten it with Seven Wonders Duel.
Maybe.
Exactly.
That I will give it to you. Seven Wonders Duels. Okay, so last time you suggested Seven Wonders Duel and Kutnahora and Final Girl.
Yes.
Final Girl, we have talked enough about Final Girl.
Yeah.
Kutnahora, was it? Okay, maybe, I don't know. In this genre, this game, Seven Wonders Duel was the one game where I, listening back to the episode, I thought that I might have been too harsh. If I had just played my first game of Seven Wonders Duel, or even my third game of Seven Wonders Duel, I would have been, yes, Louis, let's add this to the collection.
Yeah, and I think you have played most of your games of Seven Wonders Duel in Board Game Arena, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you saying that you didn't know if you had 20 games of Seven Wonders Duel left in you, and that's why you didn't want to add it.
Now, do you want to explain the gift of giving that we're going to have?
Well, we have these games wrapped in... We have these games that are pieces of paper.
Oh, Louis. Theater of the mind. The people do not see what is happening here.
Okay.
And you're just going, we have these crappy pieces of paper we pretend to be gifts. No.
I'm going to be giving Jonas games for Christmas wrapped, where he's gonna unwrap the game and decide whether he wants to keep the game in our collection because I gave it to him as a gift, or whether he will put it for sale in the secondhand market.
Oh, did you know there's actually in our imaginary house on the other side of the street, there is a orphanage that's in a constant cry for good games.
Okay.
And the decision I need to make is that, okay, should we keep this game? Or should we keep this to orphanage?
Okay. So that is the decision that you have to make. Even though the kids in the orphanage, some of them are very young. How old are they? Like up to 18?
Up to 18.
Okay. So they could
and
play
all,
any
all
game.
All types of interests.
All types of. Okay. They could play take any game.
Yes.
And they have an unlimited shelf space.
They have. And they have like zero games.
Okay. Well, then you should start with like the goodies. Try Catan first. Try Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, no, okay, they have more than zero games. Yeah. Otherwise, I would be giving every game.
They don't have these games.
They have a good collection.
Yeah, and they could have a second copy, even if they already have the game that I gave.
Yeah, because they get used.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, they of course. Okay, sure. So you're not selling it. So you're not mean if you don't accept the gift.
Mm-hmm.
You are just good.
Regifting.
Yeah, you're regifting, but for a good cause. Okay, so without further ado, do you want to start giving your gift to... Your gift to me, or
yes,
I give my gift to you?
Here is my gift to you, Louis. This one, I don't know if you know this game. I don't know.
Oh, really?
So this might be a Final Curl scenario in our hands.
I do know this game. I just opened a beautiful box of Race for the Galaxy.
I gave you Race for the Galaxy because last year I was so mean to you about Seven Wonders Duel. Okay, it wasn't last year, but this year. And I didn't offer you a counter argument for Seven Wonders Duel. You know, instead of Seven Wonders Duel, what would be a better game? What would be a game that we can easily play 20 more times? Race for the Galaxy. I mean, yeah.
Keep going, yeah.
How much do you know about Race for the Galaxy? What's your history with Race for the Galaxy?
I played Race for the Galaxy about 4 times, but every time I played it, it has been with like pretty much a year in between or something like that.
Yeah.
I know the mechanic. I just recently played in Board Game Arena because it was Board Game Arena. We were just trying to kind of play with the mechanics that the system will give us without reading all of the rules. Like, let's just try it and see if we can figure it out. I gave my friend the basic rules. I think that it plays like this, but let's not worry about too much. Let's just start playing. That is my history with Race for the Galaxy.
So how did you like your games?
I honestly don't love it.
Yep. So the first time I played Race for the Galaxy was also on Board Game Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied the mechanics. I thought I understood what are the rules of the game. I played it and I was just like, is this it?
Mm-hmm.
Is this what people are excited about?
Mm-hmm.
You play some cards to the tableau. Then what? What happens? Well, nothing much happens in the game. It's such a grind to get anything running, like a good engine running. I don't know. And then the game is over before you know it.
Yeah.
I played a couple more times, the same exact experience. Then I watched a Heavy Cardboard video about Race for the Galaxy, where they taught the game and they played a game while explaining why they are playing certain cards.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the game clicked for me. I realized that, aha, the reasons why my engines are not shooting out spaceships and galactic trendsetters is because I'm playing the game wrong. I don't know the game enough. I'm not doing the sell trade action.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that action, Luis?
I did it a lot, yeah.
Okay, that's good first step. I don't know how to continue from that because I expected you to say that. No, I don't do sell trade.
No, who cares about sell trade? It's about research and development, baby.
Wait, what is the research and the development action?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, no. It is all about the sell and trade action because the game is all about drawing cards from the deck, seeing what comes out, and then trying to find the path from those cards that you have in your hand to create an engine that works for you in a very short time frame.
See,
and there are so many paths to victory.
Yeah.
Before you even go to those other things.
Let me ask this question. You said that you were playing this wrong, that you don't know the game enough. So is it so that you have to know the game enough in order to play well? That you need to know the cards that are there?
No, you do not need to know the cards that are there. What you need to know is the actions, what they do. Well, this is, yeah, it's very easy to know what the actions do. But what you need to understand is, what do the actions do? What is the effect that comes from these actions? How powerful is that sell trade action, in fact?
Okay, that's a bit different from what I know about Race for God, because I've heard that like the game comes alive and the game becomes interesting is like when you actually know which cards could be there. Like, oh, I'm waiting for this card in order to make my engine sing in a way. And that's at least for me something that has put me off from Race for Galaxy in the past, because I'm like, I'm not interested in that. Like, again, I'm not interested in a game that in order for you to play it well, you have to play it 5, 6, 7 times, even 10 times to know the cards and to know the combos and to know which card synergizes with which other card, which card you're waiting for in order to make this thing sing. And if you don't get it, well, if you're playing with a newbie, you would still win. But if you're playing with an experienced person, then it's also like building your strategy around certain cards that, yes, it's tactical because you have a certain, like, but then still, like, there is strategies to victory that you need to know in advance in order to play well or to do well in the game. And that to me is like, well, last episode we were talking about the All King's Crown and how, like, you need 4, 5, 6 games of that. So what is the difference between here, the time?
Well, investment? Yeah, 4, 5, 6 games of King's Crown is probably going to be 10 hours minimum. 4, 5, 6 games of Race for the Galaxy is going to be, what, 2 hours max?
Mm. Mm.
It depends how fast you play it. On Board Game Arena, you can get a game in 5 minutes. In person, of course, the time takes a little bit longer. Now, yes, the game gets fun when you know the cards. Let's put it this way. The game gets more fun when you know the cards, what's in the deck. But the thing is that the first step of fun starts from when you start understanding those production cycles. Mm. When you understand that, oh, there is, first of all, this military strategy. Oh, I can build my military and then I can get these cards for free. That's such a fun feeling to have in your first games. After that, you start to realize that, oh, this development action that seems so hard, I can actually maybe build up that a little bit better, lean in there more there. Then you learn about the production consumption cycle. So you start actually producing or controlling planets that produce things. And then you start producing stuff on that and you start collecting victory points and winning games by not completing your tableau first, but taking all the victory points from there.
Mm.
And you can start doing all of this even before you know the deck.
Mm.
Now, after those things, you start learning about the deck because, you know, you're having so much fun playing the game. And then the information just kind of marinates inside your brain without you knowing it. And you get hungrier and hungrier about the different types of engines that you can keep building.
Mm.
Other engine builders that I have played seem to kind of climax at some point. You've learned that, okay, these are the paths to victory.
Mm-hmm.
These are the good cards. These are the bad cards. Not the case with Race for the Galaxy.
You don't think that's the case here?
No. Well, you will hit that point, but that point is past 1,000 games.
Okay.
And honestly, those orphans,
they don't want Race for the Galaxy?
Because they won't have anyone to teach them Race for the Galaxy.
Who's going to teach me Race for the Galaxy?
I will teach you. I will hold your hand.
See, I have two problems with Race for the Galaxy.
One, you're bad at it.
No. I mean, despite the fact that I'm bad at it, I think that iconography looks really bad.
Okay.
I like it puts me off so much.
Sure.
I think like these circles and hexagons and diamonds and like the whole icons, like they're very functional, but they're ugly. And the cars themselves are also a little bit ugly. So like that puts me off quite a lot.
Sure. So, okay. First of all, the iconography.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I understand the criticism towards it, but it's also when you start learning the iconography, it becomes very easy. And the reason why it seems too much is because there is so much of the
iconography. No, I didn't say much. I said ugly.
Okay. Well, sure. Yeah. The art. I understand that the art looks dated, but there is actually a pretty cool story about the art.
Okay.
So there was this symbiosis going on with the designer Tom Lehman and the artists. Mm-hmm. Yes, some art was lifted from other projects, but some art was kind of added after the theme was decided for the card. And Lehman would sometimes kind of give the mechanic of the card. And the art team studied the mechanic and decided that, oh, what is this mechanic representing?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it looks dated is because it's an older game.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where there is probably quite a lot of love that has gone into the art. And yes, a person from the 2025 who's used to things looking a certain way might not appreciate the art from the past decades.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Oh, the only thing that's missing here seems to be a new edition of Race for the Galaxy. And honestly, that cannot be your kind of like a reason to not to put this as a board game reviewer to say that, oh, it's perfect, it's good, it's just that art is bad. I don't like art.
Well, art is important. It's an important factor of appreciating a game and appreciating playing with a game.
Yeah, so I agree. I think if you say that art is an important factor. No, let me say this. If you say that art is an important factor, I think you need to go beyond saying, this is bad, this is ugly, I don't like this.
I agree. So this is a game that I played, and maybe it's because I'm bad and I have not decided to put the investment of spending an hour learning how the game should play with heavy cardboard YouTube channel, like, which again is like, okay, do you really need to do that? Or the alternative is like probably spending 20, 40, 50 plays, which again is like, it's like if a game needs that, then is the game good? Like, of course, after 50 plays or after the investment of the YouTube channel, then like the game starts singing and probably, but again, that puts me off to like, is this game really good if it requires some like that level of investment in order to get it, to understand it and to get it and to start being happy with the game? Yes, I think part of the answer is like, for some people, no, they will not get there. So if in the case of our venue, company venue, maybe it's harder to have the game there, or like we should have it for the people that know about the game and they want to play it. But it would be a hard sell for like, hey, look at this game. Like, let's play it 20 times, or like play it one time and you will enjoy it, because maybe people will not enjoy it, or it will be very luck-based. And depending on whether they like that or not, they might enjoy the game. Now, like, I know that there's like a level where like if I play it more, then maybe I'll like it more. And everybody that knows about this game, I think, and that have played it enough, swears by the game. So in that sense, as a board game reviewer, as a board game connoisseur, I don't think I can veto it, in the sense like this is the engine builder, right? Like this is the engine building game that is still out there. Like still most people say this is the best engine builder, in the same sense that I could not veto El Grande for Area Majority or Area Control game. And because of that, I will give a thumbs up to this game in order to also maybe play it more in our hypothetical and not give it to the orphans. But that this is also a game that when we reach a limit to our hypothetical board game collection, this might be one of the first games that goes. Would that be a good compromise?
Well, we don't need to discuss about the future.
Yes.
It's all about the now.
In the now.
Are you accepting this game into the collection or not?
I think I cannot in good conscience reject it.
You can or can't?
I can. I can't in good conscience reject it.
Okay. Which means?
Which means that I am giving a thumbs up, which I had already said.
Okay, great. Now I was just like wondering what the thumbs up means, because can it mean that, okay, I'm giving a thumbs up as I take it out?
No. That would be a veto, a thumbs down. No, I give it a thumbs up. It's going into our collection.
Great. You won't regret it.
All right. By the way, I played with my friend in Board Game Arena recently and we were like, let's try it again some other time. So there's definitely more games of this. And it was indeed, like in Board Game Arena, it took nothing.
Yeah. Have you done the military strategy already?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, try the military search.
I think I tried
next.
Some. I had some military. I'm like, if I have this card, then maybe I discount something. So for sure, more games coming. So
yeah. I would suggest that, like, try the military strategy next time. Try to build up. How big can you make your military power?
Mm.
Whenever you capture a windfall planet, sell the goods from that planet.
Okay,
that's the thing. Do that. You will get a big income of cards, which gives you more greater planets to pick out from. And I think that will kind of maybe show you show you what Race for the Galaxy can be. That's okay. My suggestion for your next game.
Have you played any of the expansions? Like, there's a couple of expansions, right? Or is it just more cards of the same? Or does it add mechanics to it?
Yeah, I have been a bit lazy when it comes to the expansions. I know some people really like them. I have found so much comfort in the base Race for the Galaxy that I have not explored the expansions so much.
All right.
What do I get?
Little big box.
Oh, Luis, you have made such a nice wrapping paper around this gift. Such a nice little bow.
Yeah.
This nice gift here. Let me open it. Oh, Castles of Burgundy.
Yes.
You know, Luis.
Yeah.
I need to give one of my gifts away.
Oh.
Because I was going to give you Castles of Burgundy.
Oh, no. So we need to give one version of that to the orphanage?
Yeah, no, Luis, of course I'm going to keep Castles of Burgundy. I'm hoping we're going to play this as a two-player game. I hope.
Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about it?
No, I was going to say, I played it as a two-player. Have you ever played as a two-player game?
Yeah. That's okay. My preferred player count for Castles of
Really?
Burgundy. Yeah. What do you prefer more?
I think I like three more.
Three is nice, yes. Yeah. But it's just... You know, when you have three players, there's so many other more interactive games maybe to pick out from. So Castles of Burgundy, not necessarily my favorite choice, but Castles of Burgundy is one of my favorite games to play on a weeknight at home with Chilla. Unfortunately, Chilla does not feel the same way. She doesn't care so much for Castles of Burgundy, but I love Castles of Burgundy.
Do you have the old school?
I have this, is it the second edition? So not the oldest.
Not the beiges.
Yeah, I wish I would have that because I know the art looks a little bit nicer in the second edition, but I feel that the tiles are not so legible.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to squint a little bit.
The tiles for the castles or the tiles for the woods? I guess for the animals.
The hex tiles.
Yeah.
And especially the animals.
Yeah. You don't have the super new edition?
No, that box is way too big.
Yeah, that box is way too big. But I think that version is like. The nicest version.
Absolutely, it is.
And that has like the best legibility, the best, I think it's flashier. I think people, maybe Chilla would enjoy this as a weeknight game.
That can be. Although, Castles of Burgundy, it can be a mean game when you get into the animal game.
Yeah.
And you are collecting those cows.
Yeah.
And I see that you're collecting those cows. And then there is that one missing cow piece
that I need
there. And it's my turn. I'm going to take it from you.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Chilla doesn't like it.
then I take the chip, and then I still complete the section earlier than you, which means that I complete all of my light green sections, which means I get the tile, and I get the extra bonuses, and I get the extra. So I think, yes, it can be super mean, but there's ways to go around the meanness and still like pivot. And I love, this is my type of dice placement game, where like you have some ways of mitigating the luck, you still have some luck involved. And you just have to make do with what you rolled. And it's exciting.
And it is exciting to build up those combos in your duchy. But at the same time, you get to do so much hate drafting in it. You can snipe out those tiles that someone else wants.
Yes, you can. But then you just have to decide. Because I think that's also part of the game. Like, should I...
I'm saying this as a positive.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm...
What? Drafting. I thought you were saying it as a negative.
No. You can do hate drafting. I love interaction, Luis. I love to be mean.
Okay. I also love interaction. I don't love when people are mean, but I love it because then that brings that tension of like, should I take the boat now?
Or can I wait?
Or can I wait one more turn? And then you wait and then they take it and like,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's such a good game.
I had a bit of a similar arc with Castles of Burgundy compared to Race for the Galaxy, meaning that the first games I played of Castles of Burgundy, I just didn't get why so many people like this game. I simply got the game because it's a classic game. So many people like it. It was cheap. You know, I thought it was a safe bet. Then I tried it and I just didn't understand it.
Okay.
And I think my big struggle with the game was that, you know, the point saladiness of it. Mm-hmm. You get so many points from all the different places. So it's sometimes difficult to see what should I do in order to win in the game. I get points there. I get points from there. Also from there and there and there and there and there.
Mm-hmm.
So should I just do something?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the more familiar you get with the buildings and the hexes and the other mechanics as well, the more you start to understand how some of those points are this fool's gold. Is that the proper way to say this?
Mm-hmm.
They glitter. They seem like good investments, but they are the tiles that you need to ignore.
Yep. You need to be efficient in this game.
Yes. And you need to look at what are the tiles that you really, really need.
Yeah.
Yep. What are the combos that you can build up to?
Definitely. I 100% agree. I wish I had the newer version, but I know that if I had that newer version, this game would not be played because, or maybe I could play with Mia a little bit at home, but it would not leave the house because it's such a big box. So this is the second version. I think the one that you know about.
That's the gift here.
Yes.
I first did not recognize the second version, but yes, now that I look closer,
yeah,
it is in fact the velvety red box. I wish you would have gotten me though the new fancy edition. I think we would have had space here.
Oh, surprise! Here is the new fantasy edition. I also got you that.
Okay. I have a gift for you.
Okay. All right. Is this a game that you think I played? Or is this a game that I have not said anything? Okay. This is a box of Kalimala by Queens Games.
Queens Games?
By...
No, Alicat Games.
Alicat
Games. That's a new version.
Okay. Kalimala by Alicat Games and designed by Fabio Lopiano, it says here.
It does say that.
Okay. I played Kalimala.
Mm-hmm.
I played Kalimala once.
Yes. So?
I know that you have...
I played it one time. That's.
I know that you have...
Even playing zero times would be enough, wouldn't it be, with certain games?
Yes, according to me, yes, if I trust you enough. I found Kalimala frustrating.
Mm.
I wish I had played Kalimala better, which is always a good sign to say like, hey, if I try this again, maybe I could play a bit better.
Yeah, isn't it nice when a game kind of lives in your head rent-free? Isn't that a sign of a good game where you feel that next time I'm going to do so much better?
I mean, it has also happened to me that the second time I play, like, nope, this is a bad game.
Oh, but okay, hey, are you saying that a game is not good if you're not good at it?
No.
But what is it that you're saying? No, tell me.
No, it's like, this game was frustrating. Now that I know the game better, it's like, probably I can do better and it will be less frustrating. So the game is frustrating on purpose. Like, the game has these push and pulls that like forces you to focus your attention in the right way in order to be less frustrating. And that is rewarding. If a game is just frustrating, even though you know how to play it and you play it three times and it's still frustrating.
What's an example of a game like that?
A game like that, what is the example? Like, I cannot think on the top of my head, to be honest. But I felt...
Because you do understand.
Yeah.
This sounds like you're saying that if I still am not good at the game after three games, it's
I know
a
it
bad
sounds like
game.
That. No. I know it sounds like that, but that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
There are games that I'm bad, but I'm like, yeah, this is a good game. But I cannot think of any that is like, no, this is just bad design.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to. First, I wouldn't, even if I remember, maybe I wouldn't want to, in this festive season where we're giving each other games, I wouldn't want to throw a game under the bus yet. But yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, there's some games that you're just like, yeah,
I don't know.
You really don't?
That's the thing. Yeah. I do not know. I mean,
for example,
yeah.
Let's say that we talked about the Druids of the Dora a couple of episodes ago, yeah. Right? And it's a game that is like, we didn't really enjoy it. We didn't really like it. It was frustrating to get some of the supplies. It was frustrating that you had to focus on some of those things in order to do well. Like, it just felt wrong. Like, it felt like a design. Yeah. I didn't like it. Not that I could not do better at the game. Like, I think if I played a couple more times, I would definitely do better. Still a game that I don't think I would like to play.
No, the frustration in Druids of Edora for me was in the bookkeeping.
Mm.
Would you say that Kalimala has a lot of bookkeeping?
No. I'm not saying that about Kalimala.
Because I think that's like two levels of frustration. Yes, bookkeeping generally frustrates me. And if I get better at a game and it's still a lot of bookkeeping for me, yes, it's still frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's if the game is a tough beast to master and it's frustrating because of that, then I'm usually more piqued. My interest is piqued.
If the game is good.
What?
Again, like if the game is not good, like I don't want to master these. Like
sure, yeah. But then what is the bad thing about?
Then it's bad design sometimes. Like
okay, what is the bad thing about Kalima?
No, I'm not saying Kalimala is bad. I just said I was frustrated, but it was the first type of frustration, the good type of frustration.
And can I guess what your frustrations were?
Yes.
Yeah. You were perhaps frustrated that we did scoring for certain criteria when you were not ready to score for that thing yet.
No, actually. Oh. Well, yes and no. I think it was funny that I got a lot of points at the beginning of the game because I was focusing on like the short-term goals by like we're going to score there. Like then I want to score and I gonna want to get the 3 points or whatever amount of points. I think you get 3 points for
that. Yeah, there's, okay, first of all, you have 15 scoring rounds.
Yeah.
And each scoring round, first place gets 3 points, second place 2 points, third place 1 point.
Yeah.
It feels like a game where you can win by just being third in every of the scoring rounds.
Yeah.
You don't need to be first all the time. And even with that 1 point seems like a nice amount of points.
I remember it was not that high score when we played.
I can't remember the end of the scores.
But I was thinking like you played more. So what's a typical?
Yeah, I can't remember.
You can remember anything.
No.
Yeah, okay. No, my main frustration I think with the game was like not really understanding again like what does it mean if I put it here and if somebody else puts their token. Not understanding the mechanics, but not understanding the implications of a move. And again, that is good. Like
yeah, exactly.
After I played the first time, it's like hey, now I understand better. Now I understand like okay. This is what's gonna happen. This is probably where if I go here, people either will not want to go because they don't want to give me the juicy points, or they do want to go because they want to take their juicy pennies for themselves. But then it's like, okay, I understand the implications of my action. Where I think the first game that you played is not as easy to understand those implications of the actions
and how they
also move. Like, okay, if I do this, I will be better placed at doing this other thing, which will be put me better placed in order to put a warehouse here in order to score eventually for when warehouses score, for when we go to England or like whatever. Like, so that is kind of.
Yeah, because the scoring rounds are player triggered.
Yeah.
You know, once a certain amount of workers have been put into certain spaces, the scoring round happens, which results into certain scoring rounds where you just feel that, hey, No. I didn't want to score that yet. Yeah. I wanted to have one more action before we do the scoring.
Yeah, exactly. Which is always, I think it's always good design. Like when you always feel like, oh, damn it. If I had only had one more turn or one more action before it scores, that does not necessarily mean it's a bad game.
Yeah.
I think this actually means normally that it's a well-designed game because it's like, ugh, if I had just focused on there, but then I focus on something else, especially if you're playing well.
Yeah. And understanding those implications, the rules themselves are very simple.
Yeah.
So every time I played the game, there has been someone who is not necessarily super comfortable with heavier games.
Mm-hmm.
They have had zero problems internalizing the rules compared to other types of games. They have been kind of fighting for the win as well. Rules are easy to understand. The implications, now we need to start thinking about, should I go for the popular spaces? Should I go for the unpopular spaces?
Mm-hmm.
Should I emphasize on the first scoring criteria? Should I emphasize for the last scoring criteria?
Mm-hmm.
Or should I just be third on every everything. Round?
You know?
Those are interesting questions.
Yeah. Honestly, Jonas, I wish you had...
Given you more time?
Given me more time to...
It's too soon.
It is too soon.
Mm.
How many times have you played this?
I have played it 3 times.
Just 3 times. And you still think this should go into our fantasy collection?
Yeah. I do think. And okay, if you are struggling to say no, I can give you the perfect jumping board to a no. So Race for the Galaxy, I kind of offered as a counterpart to Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah.
Kalimala, I'm offering as a counterpart to Kutnahora that has this player-driven economy going on. You're still doing resource conversion, those familiar tropes of efficiency puzzles.
It has nothing to do with Kutnahora.
Exactly. Take this jumping board. Lewis, you can jump from this to no.
No. I would not do that. I'm seeing
Lewis's eyes flaming.
I'm not flaming. It's just... I wish you had said yes to Kutnahora. because you're just wrong not to have it in their fantasy collection. I also like, I feel this game is really good. I just haven't experienced it. I just haven't experienced the good games of this, which is where like I'm like, also, you have played 3 times. If you had played 7 times and you gave me this, I would be like, because I trust you, unlike you, my friend, I would be like, no questions asked. If you think it's good, it goes to our collection. You'd be happy, I'd be happy.
That's a fair point.
But because you gave it to me now, I'm troubling because I also don't want to say no, because I feel like if I played more, then it would be there. Like maybe we
would. Luis, we need an answer.
Is it going to be a yes?
Oh, I was so certain it was going to be a no. But okay.
I am a positive person.
Sure. Kalimala going into the
collection. I trust that this is going to be a good decision.
Yep. So
now. Plus then again, I have more games that when the collection gets gets full, I have easier time than being like, okay, these are the games that we're pushing out.
So we now have in the collection El Grande, Ra, Strike, Race for the Galaxy, Castles of Burgundy, and Kalimala.
6.
Kalimala out of these ones, yes, this is kind of like a choice that, or a pick that stands out. Not the safest choice. I would say that the other games, you know, you'll see these on every top 10 lists. Maybe not Strike so much.
Yeah, no.
But Strike, when it comes to lighter games, Strike, you should see on all the top 10 lists. And Kalimala is one that's a little bit more, maybe a more unique pick.
Yeah, not very well known, which makes our collection a little bit more interesting, has more personality.
Yes, but I feel that our collection is getting pretty weighty on that mid-weight section. Maybe we should try to
round it out. I will give you this nice little gift.
Luis, you have, again, picked such a nice wrapping paper. This one has gingerbread men on it, little Santa Clauses.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You just said we have to go light.
Oh, I didn't say light. I just said that either heavier or lighter or out of this Euro efficiency zone.
Ah, you said. Ah, okay. I understand now.
But I love this. This is exactly what I wanted in our collection.
Oh, really?
Yes. This is a Decrypto.
Yes.
This is my favorite. What are these? Word games?
Word games, word guessing games?
Yeah. This is my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 2 teams against each other. Inside your team, you're trying to give clues that are easy to get for your team, hard to get for the other team.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want the other team to start realizing what are the words that you have on your side.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to explain how it works on a podcast. Because this is one of those games where people don't understand the first time. And here's one thing I don't understand. What's so hard to understand?
I do not know, but it's impossible to get people to understand the rules the first time you explain them until you play for the first round. Yeah. I agree. It's like, it's so hard.
But it's like, why?
I don't know.
And this is not me saying I'm a smart person, but I had no trouble understanding the premise on the first try.
I do not know. I've always had trouble explaining this. So I agree with you.
These are the words your team sees. You will say the same clues out loud. Everyone will hear the same clues. You know what? The other team might be able to deduce what words you see if your clues are too easy.
Yeah.
And people are like, huh? So what do I give as a clue?
I think it's also like
the
combination between numbers and like you'll get a code which matches the words that you have in front of you. You have to give clues related to the code.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? But I have numbers, but I'm trying to guess letters. Yes. So match this word. Like, I think, well, I don't know. Yeah.
And also, I'm comfortable punching down. Because if you're feeling now stupid because of the words I said out loud, it's like no reason to feel stupid. It's like so many people get confused about this game. It's like you're not unique.
Nope.
A lot of people struggle with this. It's just personally, I have not understood where those struggles come from.
I also think normally, well, the times that I've explained this game, it's most of the time for non-gamers or very light gamers, never for heavy gamers. I've never explained this game to, in the meetup, for example, or to another group of just board gamers that I know. So maybe that's also part of why you understood it so fast. Or some board, like heavy board gamer would be like, oh, yeah, I get it.
Yep. And I played this only at the meetup.
Okay.
Yeah, and there are always people who play even more complex games.
That don't understand it. Okay. All right, yeah, okay, that can be it. This game, I actually bought for the company, like for the company where I work, like within the first 2 months, all of the sheets. People took it home, people played with their friends, because we have this policy where like people can just borrow the games.
All of the
sheets.
Sheets.
Yeah, sheets. All of the sheets that come in the box, which are many.
Yeah.
They just...
Really?
Yeah, yeah, completely disappear.
Okay,
so,
hey,
yeah.
Why is the crypto better than code names?
The crypto is better than code names. I just think it makes... It's just more fun. Like, it allows you to have this kind of inside jokes within each round, with each either session or just game that like just start coming out. And then the next day that you get together, next time you go, I remember when we played, like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah. To this date, we still have a running joke with some group of friends about the crypto. So
yeah,
I think that's it. And then Codenames, yeah, it's a good game, but you don't get those fun interactions besides that.
Yes. Why is
or
it
what
better
do you
than,
think?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I haven't necessarily had those humorous inside jokes,
yeah.
but it is so funny how the clues are always this balance between completely Byzantine
yeah.
to something that still should be understood.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're just trying to find the line within inside your team of
yeah.
like, how far can I push this
yeah.
clue?
Yeah,
at
yeah.
what point you will just look at me and being like, what on earth
yeah,
does
yeah.
that mean?
Yeah.
How about just one? Does just one match the crypto?
I think just one can match the crypto for a certain group of people.
Yeah, but everything for like, you know, for a certain group of people. Codenames, yes, for certain groups of people, you play Codenames instead of the crypto.
I don't think I ever would play Codenames instead of the crypto.
Oh, okay. Here's a scenario where I would play Codenames instead of the crypto.
Mm.
If it is one of those parties where you go to another adult's home, and you're sitting there, you're eating cheeses and you're drinking wine.
Mm.
And then Codenames is pretty fun.
I would never eat cheese, but okay.
Yep. Codenames would be pretty fun in those situations.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas,
that's right.
Yeah. And
a
if
bit
people
lighter.
Are not games. Yeah.
A bit lighter, not so much complex. Like, you don't have to go into this. They're not going to understand the rules the first time I explain it problem.
Yeah, exactly. You say that, hey, I brought a game.
Yeah.
One person will roll their eyes. But then, you know, you show them Codenames and they're... They will have fun.
Yeah, that's
versus
true.
Versus when you would start explaining the rules of the crypto to that person.
Like, maybe I win.
They would yeah. say, like, I am not going to invite you on
yeah.
this next
yeah,
time.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, maybe we shouldn't play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think just one, I think the crypto is just way more replayable. Like, I think just one, it kind of gets old faster. Maybe because you also play more rounds of just one when you're playing, like maybe the crypto you play a game or two and you're like, ah, let's pack it away, let's do something else or let's play something else. And just one, you could just keep playing, but still I feel like I'm wrong here, but I feel like if you give me the choice, do you want to play the crypto to just one, I would almost always just answer, do you want to play in teams or do you want to play together? That was maybe not
Wait,
where I was
teams. No, because
you want to play against
in teams, yeah, but playing in teams feels like you're playing together.
Yeah, but that's my point. Like, you're playing still against each other, so it's a bit competitive.
True.
Where, like, we're just one is cooperative. Yeah. Also, I bought just one for the company. There's people that don't like competition at all. They don't play ever the crypto, but they're very happy to join a game of just one.
How about Soul Clover versus the crypto?
I think Soul Clover is, like, it's the worst version of just one. Like, I think it's different, of course, because you're matching the games and it's an interesting puzzle, but sometimes it's just harder to get to a coherent combination of two words.
Oh, I can't wear with this.
What?
I like Soul Clover because it is difficult.
I mean, yeah, I like it's difficult and it's
fun.
We need
to put the games to a blender for Luis and then
no, but for
make
people,
it easy for him to digest.
I'm not, for no, I love Soul Clover, but I think it's... It can be more frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's
yes.
always like, it's cooperative. So like you're really, there's no, well, you're trying to all guess and there's some point system, but that is not important whatsoever. Same as just one. In the crypto, there's clear like winning condition. Like you are winning or losing against the other team. And that's, I think, makes it a bit more fun myself.
Yeah, I really enjoy playing Soul Clover. But the crypto, the puzzle is just so much more fun,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's so much about reading your teammates
mm-hmm.
as well, understanding where is your jargon, your secret language at the moment.
Yeah.
And then also kind of understanding what about the team on the other side of the table? How well do they know what we are, the words that we have here? And of course, when you're trying to figure out the words from the other side of the team, That's also so much fun.
Yeah.
There's like, hey, there's a whole other puzzle there that we even didn't talk about. There's like two puzzles.
Yep.
Both of them super fun.
Super fun.
Yeah.
All right. So Jonas, is the crypto going to the orphanage?
No way. No. That orphanage is going to have the worst Christmas.
Yeah. Zero games went to the orphanage.
But we're going to have a lovely Christmas with these games.
All right. That was the crypto. And that was the end of our current episode about the fantasy collection. We'll revisit the fantasy collection at some point, at some undefined point in the future. But we hope you'll keep listening to see where the fantasy collection goes next and to see if Jonas the Naysayer comes back. He was nowhere to be seen this episode. We want to thank you for your time. I just realized that this episode is airing between Christmas and New Year's, if everything goes according to plan. So we want to wish you a happy belated Christmas and a very happy New Year and happy holidays in general if you don't celebrate Christmas. Yeah, our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Hyvää joulua ja hyvää uutta vuotta.